I'm just so busy. I'm absolutely rushed off my feet. Oh, I'd love to help, but I don't have time. I desperately need a break. I really can't afford to stop. One of the characteristics of our society in our day and age is of people being frantically busy. The pace of life seems to be ever increasing, and so many people in our culture are chronically tired. More and more people have more and more money, and more gadgets, and more possessions. But the one thing that it seems money can't buy, that our society can't provide, that it seems so elusive, is rest. It's linked with the frantic rush to try and secure our future. The lack of rest in our society is symptomatic of a lack of peace, of a lack of security. People aren't able to rest because they never feel they have finished. What a contrast when we turn to our passage. Let's just hear those wonderful words again, verses 1 to 3. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it God rested from all his work that he had done in creation. This morning we're going to be looking, because that's our job, that's my job, to look at God's word, to explain God's word. We're going to be looking at these three verses in particular. But we're going to spend more time than we often do in seeing how the rest of the Bible picks up what is taught in Genesis 2. It's obviously about rest, and rest is one of those big themes, those big ideas that run through the Bible, that gets developed through the Bible. So I've got 4 points this morning, and the first one is that God rests because his work is perfectly completed. God rests because his work is perfectly completed. The creation of man on the seventh day is the climax of the work of creation. But we mustn't fall into the trap of thinking, therefore, oh, creation's all about man. It isn't. It's all about God. In the New Testament, Paul puts it like this. He's talking about Jesus, the Son of God, but the point still stands. Colossians 1, verse 16, all things were created through him and for him. So the big question at the end of day 6 is, what does God make of his creation? Well, we read verse 31 of the last chapter, God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening and there was morning the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. The best way I think I can explain these verses is by contrasting them with what happens when we get to the end of some work. Say, and I guess many of us have been in this scenario, some room in your house is looking scruffy and rather tired. You decide it needs redecorating. So it's painted, maybe papered, you take your choice, it's your room. Perhaps you even feel able to splash out on some new furniture, certainly the odd new accessory. You're pleased with the result, but it never seems quite right. Maybe it's that picture. Maybe that picture isn't in quite the right place. Maybe if I swap those two around, maybe it'd look better. Or, those curtains, they look nice, but I don't think they're quite right to go with that carpet. But you can't afford to do any more, so you just have to put up with it as it is. But every day, every time you come into the room, it just grates a bit, because you know it's not quite perfect. And you can more or less guarantee that the very day after you finish, you scuff the newly painted walls, or you knock a cup of coffee over on the new settee. In other words, it's not just me, is it? In other words, nothing in this life is ever quite perfect, is it? And so we never feel able to rest. There's always something more that we feel needs doing. But with God, verse 31 of the last chapter, God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. It truly was perfect. You know, God didn't look at his creation and say, "Oh, I wish I'd designed oak trees a bit different. Oh my goodness, why did I choose that color for Eve's hair?" Now, God didn't do that. It was absolutely perfect. There was no snagging list for God. And so 2 verse 1 concludes, "Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them." That phrase, "all the host of them," means everything in them. Exodus 20 verse 11 puts it like this, "For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that is in them." Everything. I've done it. I've finished. Completely. We live in a world that was created perfect. Certainly much has gone wrong since. We'll learn about that when we get to chapter 3 eventually. But we need to remember that God made it perfect. So what does God do next? Verse 2, "And on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had done." On the seventh day, God finished his work he had done. Now, that could sound like he tidied up a few loose ends that he hadn't quite finished the night before. But that isn't what's meant. The phrase, "God finished his work that he had done," means that it had been completed by the time we get to the seventh day. You actually get a very similar phrase to this at the end of Exodus 40, when the tabernacle's been designed and built and set up. And in Exodus 40, verse 33, we read, "And he," that's Moses, "erected the court around the tabernacle and the altar and set up the screen of the gate of the court. So Moses finished the work." He'd already finished it. So you could translate it, "So Moses had finished the work." And actually, back in Genesis 2, that's how the NIV, the New International Version, translates it. "By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had done." So it's done. It's finished. And result, God rested. The word there is a Hebrew verb. It's probably the only one that most of us know. And yes, you do know at least one Hebrew verb. It's the word Shabbat. The noun of it is Sabbath. And the key sense of the word is to desist from work. So the key idea is not so much rest in and of itself, but of stopping, of ceasing from a task. God had finished his work of creation, so he stopped from his work of creation. Now, that isn't to say God just sat around and did nothing. We have Jesus' word for that. John 5, verse 17, this is Jesus speaking. He said, "Jesus answered them, 'My Father is working until now, and I'm working.'" Rest isn't total inactivity. And we know from Hebrews 1, verse 3, that God the Son is at work constantly upholding the universe. Hebrews 1, verse 3 says, "He upholds the universe by the word of his power." So God is always doing that. But he had finished his work of creation. And just by way of aside, as it were, in a space bar down the side of the screen, that implies that the process by which God upholds his universe, his creation, those processes are different from those which brought them into being. And that is another reason why the theory of evolution must be wrong. Because the theory of evolution paints a continuous picture of the universe continuing to evolve. Evolution has no room for the idea that it was ever finished. So if you come across a Christian who says, "Oh, it's okay to believe in evolution," ask them, "Well, okay, at what point was the work finished?" And they can't answer that question. But God says it's finished, and therefore he can rest. So on the seventh day, God stopped his work of creation. But it's appropriate to translate it, "and he rested," because in Exodus 31, verse 17, we get that idea made explicitly. God says, "It's a sign forever between me and the people of Israel that in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth. On the seventh day, he rested and was refreshed." Leon Morris, Australian scholar now with the Lord, comments, "So we should think of the rest as something like the satisfaction that comes from accomplishment, from the completion of a task, from the exercise of creativity." And then something happens on the seventh day that, if we hadn't read it in advance, I think would be a surprise to us, that we wouldn't have expected. Verse 3. "So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it God rested from all his work that he had done in creation." Now that's something new. This is the first time a day has been blessed. Up till now in Genesis 1, it's been living creatures that have been blessed. And that's the norm in the Bible, that it's living creatures that are blessed, be they down here that have created things or God himself. So what does it mean for the seventh day to be blessed? Well, the next phrase tells us, "So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy." Now, again, it's very unusual for a day to be holy. It's usually in the Bible places, people, and sort of religious objects, you know, the furniture and the utensils in the temple, for example, that are declared holy. But the basic idea of being holy in the Bible is of being set apart for God. So the seventh day, it means, is specially set apart for God, because on it, God rested from all his work that he had done in creation. Now that brings us into the picture. That means we live in a world which has a pattern of days built into it. We saw that in chapter 1, very obviously, didn't we, that there's a pattern of days. And God has declared the seventh day is holy. It's set apart for him in some way. But that raises a huge question, which is why we need to carry on reading through the Bible. If the seventh day has been made holy, what does that mean practically for us? How is it to be holy? So we're going to look at what the Old Testament teaches in our next point. Then in the next point, what does the New Testament teach? And finally, in the final point, how does that all apply to us? So turning now to the rest of the Old Testament, second heading, the Sabbath, rest for the rescued. The Sabbath, rest for the rescued. There's no command in Genesis for us to do anything special to observe this day in any way. There's no record of Adam, for example, or Noah, or Abraham, or anyone else before the time of Moses observing the Sabbath in any particular way. So we turn to the time of Moses, to the book of Exodus. There's an anticipation in the earlier chapters of Exodus of a day's rest in seven when the instructions are given about the manna. Remember, they are miraculously given food from heaven, and they're very detailed instructions collected on 6 days, but on the sixth day you collect twice as much because there's not going to be any. The seventh day you have a day's break from collecting your food on the seventh day. But then in Exodus 20, there is a command, and this is the first time anything is commanded about the Sabbath, about the seventh day. And this is what we read in Exodus 20, verses 8 to 11. "Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male servant or your female servant or your livestock or the sojourner who is within your gates. For in 7 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy." Okay, what do we learn from that about what the Jews were supposed to do? Well, I've got briefly five, just very brief bullet points, headings about what it meant for them in the Old Testament. The first thing to notice is it is a command given to the Israelites in the Old Testament law. It's not given to us. We'll have to consider how it applies to us when we get to the New Testament. Secondly, it is primarily a day of rest. It's not a day of worship as such. The initial command is to rest, not to have a religious gathering. Now, there is then one place, Leviticus 23, verse 3, where we learn that there are to be religious gatherings on the day. 6 days shall work be done, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy convocation, which means a holy gathering. You shall do no work. It is Sabbath to the Lord in all your dwelling places. No details are given as to just what they were to do at the holy convocation. You get the impression it's just simply rest. But certainly the focus is still on rest. We can tell that from the name given to the day. It is the Sabbath day, which literally means the rest day. Third thing we learn from the Old Testament commands is that it is a day set apart in some special way for God. Remember the Sabbath day, to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. So it was never meant to be just a sort of mechanical thing. Obeying God, you know, I switch off, I rest, but I never think about God. I'm resting. I can't think about anything. You know, now, that was never the idea. It's about your attitude to God. And that is brought out very beautifully in Isaiah 58, verse 13, which says, "If you turn back your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, and the holy day of the Lord honorable." Graham Bainan comments, "The Sabbath was not supposed to be a harsh restriction. It was supposed to be a delight. Your attitude to the Sabbath showed your attitude to God. It's His Sabbath. You honored the day because you wanted to honor Him." End of quote. Fourthly, fourth thing we learn from these verses, it's because of the pattern of creation. The reason given in Exodus 20 takes us back to the week of creation. The last verse, "For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy." So Sabbath is part of the pattern of creation. We're not made as machines that keep working 24/7. We need rest and recuperation. Another verse in Exodus makes this very clear, Exodus 23:12. "6 days you shall do your work, but on the seventh day you shall rest, that your ox and your donkey may have rest, and the son of your servant woman and the alien may be refreshed." Alien's not E.T., alien is a foreigner, okay? So who were quite likely to be slaves, you know, so they can rest as well. We need time off to rest and to be refreshed, literally to draw breath. It's simply part of how God made us, and we are wise if we live within the limits of our humanity. And then the fifth thing we learn from the Old Testament about the Sabbath is that it is also because they had been rescued from slavery. Don't know if you knew, but the Ten Commandments are given in two places, Exodus 20 most famously, but they're also given in Deuteronomy when Moses preaches to the people before they go into the Promised Land. And in Deuteronomy chapter 5, we have them stated again, the Ten Commandments are the same, you'll be relieved to know. But the reason given for the observing the Sabbath is different. Deuteronomy 5 verse 15. "You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day." The Sabbath rest is a reminder for them, hey, you guys have been rescued from slavery. Look, before you were slaves, and you couldn't rest. You couldn't say, "Hey, excuse me, it's my day off. My union says so. Tough, you're a slave. Get on with it." But now they've been rescued, they can rest. No wonder the Sabbath day should be a delight to them. So here the Sabbath is connected to salvation. They had to rest from work because God has rescued them. And that idea of rest is reinforced by the way the Promised Land is spoken of as the people's rest, about a place where God will give them rest. Great couple of verses, Deuteronomy 12, 9 and 10. "For you have not as yet come to the rest and to the inheritance that the Lord your God is giving you. But when you go over the Jordan and live in the land that the Lord your God is giving you to inherit, And when he gives you rest from all your enemies around, so that you can live in safety. And then there are more instructions. So the promised land was a place of rest, a place where they could rest from their enemies, rest from slavery. So rest is more than just to sit down and put your feet up. Rest is a picture in the Old Testament of the peace of salvation that God will give his people. It's a picture of being brought into a secure place, a place of peace, a place to be enjoyed in relationship with God. Going back and again. This is why the commandment tells Israel to remember the Sabbath. By having a special day when they stopped working, they were remembering what God had done for them and the rest he offered them. They were celebrating their salvation. Now that's the Old Testament. We are not Old Testament Jews. Even if any of you are Jews, you're not Old Testament Jews. You live this side of Christ. God's commandments to Israel don't apply directly to us. So what happens when we move to the New Testament? Well, thirdly, rest in Jesus for those he has rescued. Rest in Jesus for those he has rescued. Now, before we turn to any particular verses in the New Testament, just pause. What do you expect to find on any topic when you move from the Old Testament to the New Testament? Well, the basic way the Old Testament relates to the New Testament is that in the Old Testament there are promises. In the New Testament, those promises are fulfilled in Jesus. In the Old Testament, there are pictures, there are models, there are illustrations of what Jesus would do. And in the New Testament, we have the reality. That's what we should expect on any subject when you move from Old Testament to New Testament. And Paul confirms that that is exactly the right way to consider the Sabbath commandment, because he says this in Colossians 2, 16 and 17. Therefore, let no one pass judgment on you in questions of food or drink, or with regard to a festival or a new moon or a Sabbath. These are a shadow of the things to come, but the substance, or the NIV translates, the reality, belongs to Christ. So we turn to the New Testament expecting to find that Jesus is going to fulfill the idea of God's promise of rest after work. Jesus is going to fulfill the idea of God having saved them and rescued them from slavery and brought us into a place where we can enjoy peace. And that is exactly what we find. Matthew 11, 28 to 30. I don't know if you're how used you are to listening to sermons, but if you thought, oh my goodness, this is going on, I'm nodding off. This is the point to wake up, all right? Because these are fantastic verses. This is the heart of the message. This is the, look, if you must go to sleep, just be awake for this bit, okay? Matthew 11, 28 to 30. Jesus speaking, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, my burden is light. Jesus comes to bring rest. What a wonderful promise. The end of the never-ending striving after peace, after security. Jesus, stop striving. I offer you that peace. I offer you that security. I offer you that rest that you so strive after. I offer it you as a gift. Verses 28 to 30 of Matthew 11 have to be some of the most soothing, restful verses of the Bible. How do we enter that rest that Jesus offers us? Well, the answer is given very clearly in the letter to the Hebrews. The writer picks up on the Old Testament picture of, you remember the entry into the promised land? Remember that the generation who came out of slavery in Egypt didn't actually go into the promised land. They died in the wilderness. They didn't actually enter that rest. Why? Hebrews 4, 2 and 3. For the good news came to us, just as to them, those Old Testament Jews, but the message they heard did not benefit them because they were not united by faith with those who listened. For we who have believed enter that rest. It's by believing. God told them the good news. Hey, look, I've rescued you from slavery. I know there are lots of giants and what have you, and there are lots of enemies, but I can bring you into the promised land. Just rest, I'll do it. They didn't believe, so they didn't go in. We have to trust in God and believe his promises. And notice that means that we receive rest as a gift, not as something we work for. Hebrews 4, 9 and 10. So then there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For whoever has entered God's rest has also rested from his works, as God did from his. Sabbath's all about teaching us that you gain God's rest by stopping working. By stopping saying, I've got to save myself, I've got to achieve security, I've got to bring peace, I've got to get myself right with God, I've got to... Just be quiet, just leave it to God. He's done it. Remember then Genesis 2 verse 1, the first of our verses this morning, we read, thus the heavens and the earth were finished. In the New Testament, we read of another finished work that doesn't require any snagging list, doesn't require any rearranging of the furniture, doesn't require any extra accessories. What's that finished work? John 19, verse 30. When Jesus had received the sour wine, he said, it's finished. And he bowed his head and gave up his spirit. The work of securing our salvation was finished. Jesus has died in the place of all his people. He's taken the punishment for every last sin we have committed or will commit. On the basis of that finished work, he offers us rest. We just have to trust him. Trust God and rest. So where does that leave us? Because you've all got a question, hang on, do we observe the Sabbath and so on? Okay, let's tie those up and then we'll return to where we've just been because that's the big idea. So fourthly and finally, trust in Jesus, then you can rest. We've seen that there is a creation reason for rest, a day's rest in seven. We need rest, we need refreshment. God's rest and refreshment on the seventh day is a picture of what he graciously provides for us. And we've seen that there's also a salvation reason for the Sabbath. It celebrated God's rescue and his provision of rest. That salvation reason was a sign that is fulfilled in Jesus. So we now enter God's rest by simply believing the gospel. Simply trusting in the Savior and saying, Jesus has done it all. I'm resting in that. So are we still commanded to take one day's rest in seven? Okay, I've got four game bullet points to close with under this heading. Firstly, the Sabbath commandment in the Ten Commandments no longer applies to us. The New Testament is totally, unambiguously clear about this. Colossians 2 16 and 17, therefore let no one pass judgment on you in questions of food and drink or with regard to a festival or a new moon or a Sabbath. These are a shadow of the things to come, but the substance belongs to Christ. Or Romans 14, 5 and 10, one person esteems one day as better than another, while another esteems all days alike. Each one should be fully convinced in his own mind. And he goes on to say, why do you pass judgment on your brother, i.e. for not observing the day or whatever? Or why do you despise your brother? If you are convinced, look, I don't think I agree with Tim. I think God does require me to have Saturday every week off work or every Sunday. Look, go ahead. You're not doing wrong if you do that. But if you pass judgment on your brother or sister who doesn't think any day is special, then you are wrong, categorically wrong. Because Paul says, why do you pass judgment on your brother? Or why do you despise your brother? Martin Luther is typically forthright. If anywhere the day is made holy for the mere day's sake, if anyone sets up its observance on a Jewish foundation, this is Luther, then I order you to work on it, to ride on it, to dance on it, to feast on it, to do anything that shall remove this encroachment on Christian liberty. In other words, Luther is saying, look, if anyone tells you you've got to observe the Sabbath because the Jews were told to observe the Sabbath, then that is an assault on Christian freedom. So he says, resist it strongly. Luther didn't beat around the bush. The Old Testament law no longer directly applies to us. But, secondly, to take a day's rest in seven shows you trust God. The need for rest and recuperation still remains. So taking a day off in seven is simply wisdom. Sir James Brown, who was a senior doctor at the time, wrote a letter to the Times 25 years ago, and he said, quote, "We doctors in the treatment of nervous disorders are compelled to provide periods of rest. Some of these periods are, I think, only Sundays in arrears." End quote. We are flesh and blood. We are not machines. We need a regular day of rest. That's the way we were designed. Kevin DeYoung, in his great little book, Crazy Busy, puts it like this. Quote, "God gives us Sabbath as a gift. It is an island of get to in a sea of have to. He also offers Sabbath as a test." And I think this is the key bit. "It's an opportunity to trust God's work more than our own." He goes on, "When I go for weeks without taking adequate time off, I may or may not be disobeying the fourth commandment." I don't think you would be. "But I'm certainly too convinced of my own importance and more than a little foolish." Because you see, if you just keep going, you're saying, I've got to do it, I've got to achieve it, everything would fall apart if I didn't do things. Who do you think you are? You're not God. He says the key thing taking a day's rest in seven shows is a trust in God. Think in the Old Testament, you're a Jewish farmer. You don't get a salary paid, you know, so you can take your day off and the money's in the bank. Hey, look, if you took a day off every seven, you're saying, I trust God. I trust God that, you know, the crops will still grow, I'll still have a harvest. I'm trusting God. When I was a student, it really came home to me. You get near the exam time as a student, and suddenly people who haven't been working for half the year start working crazy hours, working 7 days a week, all hours of day and night. As a Christian student, Sunday, I just took the day off. I went to church in the morning, went to church in the evening, in the afternoon, I played a game of tennis or something like that. I thought, isn't it fantastic being a Christian? All these poor, crazy non-Christians are working 7 days a week, but I can take a day off. Think carefully about what a day off really means for you. For some of us, I think a lot of us, taking a day off means don't check your emails on the day off. Hey, why not, Kevin DeYoung suggests this, have a screen Sabbath. Social media and the internet and smartphones are tyrants. Put them in their place. Take a day off. Be wise. What is your work? What does rest look like? When I was a student, playing tennis on a Sunday afternoon was a great way to relax because, hey, my work was using my brain all week or trying to. If I'd been Andy Murray, then perhaps playing tennis on my day off wouldn't have been quite the same. You know, you've got to think what's work for you, what's rest for you. Husbands, if your wife works as a housewife and as a mother, how can you help her have a day of rest from that work? So, secondly, taking a day's rest in seven shows that we trust God. Thirdly, Sunday isn't a Christian Sabbath. We are commanded in the New Testament to keep meeting together, but there simply isn't a command in the New Testament that this should happen on a Sunday. And we're evangelicals. We believe in the authority of the Bible, not the authority of tradition. There are hints that it was the practice of the early Christians, and certainly it quickly became the norm in the early church, but there is absolutely no evidence in the Bible or in the early church that they regarded Sunday as a Christian Sabbath. Christians in the first centuries had to work on Sundays. Loads of them were slaves. It didn't become a day off until the fourth century when the emperor thought he'd become a Christian. And of course, it still isn't a day off in many parts of the world. But for many of us, obviously in the UK, a day of rest and a day of worship can come together, and that's great. But don't kid yourself that it's some absolute command. But the biggest lesson of all, and I want to stop here, is that fourthly, trust in Jesus and rejoice that you can rest in his rescue. Just as the work of creation was God's work, not ours, the work of salvation is Jesus' work, not ours. He finished it on the cross. And that is wonderful, wonderful news. It means we can rest from all that striving to secure ourselves, all that striving to find peace, and we can rest 24/7 in that way. We simply rest in Jesus. Jesus' invitation still stands. Matthew 11, 28 to 30. Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Jesus is speaking to you. That invitation is for you. Come to him. Find rest for your souls. Give up trying to earn your salvation. Give up trying to work out your own peace. Give up your own efforts to find security. Trust in Jesus, and then you can rest.